Hi everyone, and welcome to First Rank Fire. This is a podcast that gives me the chance to chat with some of the best people from around the 40k community. I'm your host Ben, and today's episode we'll be chatting with the Master of Grimdark himself. He's got probably one of the most unique and enjoyable painting styles across quite a wide range of models actually, and another Golden Demon Pin winner that I'm speaking to. Not that I'm jealous of all the people that I interview at all. Welcome to the show, Spencer. How are you doing?
I'm good, thanks. Thank you very much for having me. Yeah, that's quite an intro.
Well, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. No, I really appreciate the time. Yeah, it's a real pleasure. Like, obviously, you're a big name and absolutely love your paint style and stuff like that. So it's really great to have you on.
It sounds really strange that someone's saying that, like, you're a big name, because, yeah, I just feel like just a hobbyist, really. I just post my stuff online and, yeah.
I think a lot of people say that sort of come on, but, yeah, it's just... Yeah. So you've got a decent following and stuff like that. So yeah, definitely a good name. Everyone knows you. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's strange because when I got into the hobby, I never really thought about it, like, you know, building a following or anything like that, but it just sort of kind of happened really. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'm not complaining at all. It's an amazing feeling, you know, being able to share my work with so many people and obviously make content and everything. That it's wild. And the opportunities I've had from doing that is, yeah, it's incredible, really. So yeah, it's just I just never thought it would ever happen, really. It's wild.
Yeah, I bet. I mean, what got you into Warhammer in the first place?
So I was in it a little bit when I was a kid. I'm trying to think now. It was probably like 8, 9, 10, around that age, and yeah, had a few models. I think I had like a Dark Elf Sorceress and a few other bits and pieces. I think I had some Night Goblins.
Nice.
And I can't really remember how I first got into it when I was little. I think I just picked up a copy of White Dwarf and my mum bought it for me and just sort of fell in love with looking in the models. And then there's a Games Workshop shop not too far away, so we went there.
Yeah.
And yeah, just sort of fell in love with it then. And then sort of stopped really doing anything with it, like when I was probably when I moved to high school, really. So like, you know, around 11, just sort of never really fell out of love with it, just stopped. No real reason why. But over the years, sort of kept my eye on a little bit, you know, looked on the website every now and then and saw the models and, you know, started following a few people on Instagram when social media came around. Like Richard Gray, I think, was probably the first Warhammer person that I followed on. I mean, you can't not get inspired when you follow him. But then fast forward to lockdown. So just before lockdown, actually, me and my group of friends, we were talking about you know, getting into a hobby that we could do at home and then get together and play and stuff like that. But obviously, with lockdown happening, we couldn't get together and play. Yeah. But we were stuck at home, so kind of got into it through that. Like, sort of picked up some bits and pieces. I think the first thing I bought was an episode of or an issue of Mortal Realms, you know, the magazine. With Stormcast and Nighthaunt in there. Yeah, picked up that and... Yeah, then just went like all the way in with it, really. Like dived in the deep end.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and it, obviously being stuck at home in lockdown, it was just like a really nice thing to do at home. Like obviously getting into the hobby at that point and sort of learning everything about it again, and like started reading listening to the audiobooks and reading the books, and then like trying to get my painting better. And I just watched YouTubers and. And it's just a massive rabbit hole, and I dive all the way in.
That's interesting, because obviously you're talking about, like, I mean, originally you're talking about like Night Goblins, Dark Elves, and then like, again, Mortal Realms. Yeah, you kind of go on your Instagram, and it is predominantly 40k focused. Is there a reason behind that? Or?
So, well, yes and no. So, when I started listening to the audiobooks, I started listening to the 40k ones, and I started with. I started with Eisenhorn and Ravenor, and then went into the Horus Heresy, because I didn't really know where to start with the audiobooks for Age of Sigmar or Fantasy, so I was kind of like, oh, well, I know where to start for 40k, so I'm going to just dive into those. So I did, and then obviously listening to that, I was like, right, well, 40k it sounds amazing. Let's get into that. And obviously everyone knows what Space Marines are and that kind of thing. So that's kind of how I started with 40k when I got into the hobby again. But then over time, it's really hard, because when you're posting things to Instagram or like making YouTube videos or doing anything like that, you want to do it for the things you enjoy, because if you don't enjoy it, it just becomes, you know, it's a big hassle, and you don't, you know, if you're not enjoying it, why would you do it? It's not, yeah. it's not like you, you know, you're not going to get rich doing this. So, you know, and I've got a job. I don't need a second job. So
yeah.
you've got to do it for the love of it. But when you're posting pictures and, you know, videos to Instagram and YouTube, and if you post something for 40K and it gets thousands of likes, and then you post something for Age of Sigmar and again it gets a few hundred, in the relative scheme of things, it's very hard not to let that sort of sway your sort of effort.
Yeah.
It's, I do love Age of Sigmar. I love making content for Age of Sigmar. I love the models. Like, it's got some incredible sculpts, but yeah. time is limited. And one of the things that I want to do is make more content for people. So if I'm trying to make the content that people want to see, then kind of have to do more 40K, which I don't mind yeah. because I've got, I mean, I'm never ever going to run out of projects that I want to do for 40K anyway. So it's not like I'm, you know, forcing myself down that route,
yeah.
but it's, yeah, it's kind of just that kind of sort of social media pressure. It's not really pressure, but you know, yeah. I mean, that, for lack of a better word, that kind of sways which way I'm going to go with content more.
Yeah. I guess if you wanted to make content, people are doing that, like the tutorial stuff, having that better reach kind of makes nice sense.
Yeah, exactly. Like if you've got the choice of making two different tutorials, and you already know before you even start that one of them is going to get way, like, you know, 10 times as many views or likes as yeah. the other one, then, well, you've only got so much time in the day, so, you know, kind of going to go with that one, aren't you?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, it makes sense. Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and I think as well, the way that social media works a lot of the time is you get sort of funneled into a lane, and once you're in that lane, it's very hard to go outside of that lane and make successful content that gets the same amount of reach. So if you're, like, obviously, as you say, you go onto my Instagram profile and it is predominantly 40K. So people know that I make a lot of 40K content and they know the style of 40K content I make. So if anything is outside of that, it doesn't tend to do as well. So you do kind of get yeah. funneled into that lane. So, like, people who want to get into doing Age of Sigmar content, they can do that and they can do really well doing that. But then it's probably hard for them, like to flip it around and go and do 40K content.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a really strange one. But I mean, there's not enough time in the day for me to do all the projects I want to do. So
yeah.
It's not like yeah. I'm ever going to run out of 40K stuff that I'm going to enjoy painting.
Yeah. I mean, Rach made a really good post about it. I can't remember what it was. But it was about, I heard, like, and what you guys just, like, getting new stuff from GW and having that pressure to, like, do it and get it out as soon as possible. And it felt like, I don't know, it felt like almost a changing point in Rach's Instagram. It felt like after she posted that, it felt like there was a lot more freedom in what she was doing. I guess it comes back to that sort of joy thing you were sort of saying. It felt like she was enjoying her Instagram a little bit more, yeah. and enjoying making that content a bit more.
Yeah, it's a funny one. So obviously the preview models from Games Workshop, it's amazing because obviously getting, you know, free products is brilliant because it's very expensive. It's an expensive hobby if you want to paint everything, but even more so than that, getting it early so that you have content ready to go for when it releases is amazing. And they are, Games Workshop are brilliant with it. They don't put any pressure on you. You know, they're not like, we need you to make use of this content. Like, they'll send you products, and if you don't do anything with it, they're not going to call you up and be like, why haven't you done anything with it? I mean, imagine if they just send you loads of stuff and you don't do anything, they're not going to be very happy, and you're probably not going to be on the list for very long. But, you know, they are very good with it. And I think any pressure that comes from that is sort of self-imposed because you want to, you know, put out this content with this new product that everyone's going to be excited to see. So you kind of think, like, oh, I really need to do it. Like, a good point is with Leviathan. So obviously that's just come out. Everyone's loving it. And I've really wanted to paint the whole Tyranid side before it released, so I knuckled down and did that. And afterwards, I loved it. The models are amazing, and the Tyranid scheme that I've got is quite quick, and I really enjoy painting it. So it's not like a chore. But after doing all that, it was like, oh wow, right, okay. I've done, how many Tyranids is it? Like 47 models.
Oh yeah,
so it's a lot. Yeah, so I did that in probably about 3 weeks, and then I was like, whew, a bit burnt out now.
Yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
but it was. I mean, it's well worth it for, you know, I've got now, like, you know, just under 2,000 points of Tyranids, including those, nice. And when I put my table together, I just love how they look, and it's worth it for, you know, being able to share that with people and all the excitement that comes with that from, you know, people seeing them ahead of time, you know, before the release, and then obviously being able to link that back to the YouTube videos I've already done for the tutorials for that scheme. It all kind of is well worth it. But yeah, I really didn't need to put that pressure on myself to paint the whole lot in 3 weeks. Yeah. So any pressure that you put on that comes from it is all self-imposed. But yeah, it's hard not to let getting preview models affect how you do things, because you just want to do it. You want to paint all the cool new stuff, shiny new toys.
Yeah, and they're all like the shiniest, newest toys. You're getting everything early. It's I guess it's always going to make good content, and you get to try new things. So yeah, I guess there's so many different aspects to it. Yeah, I guess it does sort of come with that pressure of doing it. And yeah, is there that feeling of like if you're not doing it, you're not necessarily going to be doing it in the future? So like if you're not putting out those models, getting out early, do you ever feel like, oh, maybe GW won't send me anything in the future?
Not at all. No, they're really, really good. That's really good. They're no pressure. They don't mind at all. They're just very like,
that's really good.
As long as, I mean, as I say, I can imagine if you didn't put out any content for ages, then they'd probably have an issue with it. But
yeah,
they put no pressure on it, and they're just happy for you to help promote whatever it is, the new product that's coming out. So they're really, really good about it. Yeah. Like, they're just great, really. As I say, it's just all self-imposed. Like we're our own biggest enemies, really, when it comes down to it, because you just want to paint the newest thing, get it out there, and show it to everyone. And obviously, with the way the release schedules work sometimes, you kind of have to pick and choose what you're going to do.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of products that come out, and...
Oh, it's crazy how much has come out recently. I don't know. It feels like maybe since like 9, maybe 8 even. It just feels like there's just like bam, bam, bam. When you mix like 40K and Age of Sigmar, there's just so much stuff coming out constantly.
It's a good problem to have, because it means you've got all this, this wealth of amazing models to paint, and it's spoiled for choice, really. But it's hard to not get that feeling of like, I need to paint everything. I need to have everything, because you've got to take a step back and go, actually, no, I don't need this release, or I'm not going to paint up that model, or I might just paint one model from this new release rather than trying to batch paint a whole unit. Whilst, you know, I'm just kind of being a bit more conservative with it and not, you know, not being like, I need to do everything, because you're just burning yourself out.
Do you get much chance to sort of paint for yourself, not necessarily for Instagram?
I suppose I do, but pretty much everything that I paint for Instagram, I kind of see it as painting for myself as well, because there's not very often when I've got something that I want to paint that I'm not interested in, because I don't do it full time. It's not my job. I don't feel like any pressure to, like, if there was a release that was coming out that I wasn't really interested in, or, you know, a model that I didn't particularly like, I wouldn't feel any pressure to have to do it, because I don't have to. It's all the models that I paint for Instagram are ones that I really like and want to paint and I'm passionate about, because I think if I wasn't passionate about it, then it would come through in the painting and you could see it and go, oh, it's probably not your best work because you rushed it, or you just half-assed it, and I think it shows.
Definitely.
Which I think is like probably something that's quite important actually with social media, is like when you're putting out content, to put out content that you are really happy with or really enjoy making, because it's really hard. I think it's really obvious when you make content that you're not proud of or not happy with or didn't enjoy making, it comes across in the finished products and people see that and it doesn't do as well. And I think if you're something you're really passionate about, you know, it might not always do well, but I think it's got a better chance of doing well. And you're more likely to, if you do something really well that you enjoy, to do that and then keep doing more content rather than do something you hate, doesn't do very well. Then you get, you know, that I spent all this time doing something I didn't enjoy, didn't do very well anyway. So what's the point?
What's the point? Why would I bother? Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that probably comes across with people like you or Rach or some sort of the other really great painters. Obviously, my Instagram isn't necessarily about my painting. It's probably more about the podcast, but So my painting is nowhere near that style, but so I feel like if I make mistakes, it kind of disappears within the mistakes that are just generally within the model. So if I didn't care as much, it probably would have less of an effect. But when you look at like your guys' painting, I feel like because you're at that top level, it would it is a big step down. It is a big noticeable change. So I guess it makes sense for sort of you guys and the level you paint at.
Yeah, like I think especially like over time. So obviously I've not been doing it that long, really, in the grand scheme of things compared to some people. So I think over time, like I have improved quite a lot in like trying new techniques, and like there was a time when I was sort of painting, but like in my sort of style, doing the grimy things, but doing it quite so like just base coats and then all the grime to make the model pop. And now it's sort of scaling back the grime a little bit, but bringing out the model underneath and just sort of like adjusting things. So I think now, looking back at those models, at the time I was really happy with them, and like the quality of what I was doing then, I was really happy with that.
Yeah.
But now, like, because I've sort of stepped up a little bit more, if I just went back to that, because that method was really quick and easy, and it'd be great for like army painting, but if I just sort of posted that all the time now, I feel like I wouldn't be as happy with it, I wouldn't be as passionate about it, and then because of that, it wouldn't come across as well. And as I say, because it's a noticeable step down, I think that would come across, and then people probably wouldn't enjoy it as much.
Yeah, no, totally. Obviously, you're known for your painting, and you do paint a lot. Would you say that is your sort of favourite part of the hobby?
Yeah. I'd love to game more, but it's just time, and
it's playing is time heavy. Yeah, definitely.
And also like I'm like a proper hobby butterfly, so painting the whole army is quite a challenge. As I said, I've got like just shy of 2,000 points of Tyranids now. I mean, I don't even know what else I've got. I've got all sorts because. I just like painting lots of different things.
Yeah.
Which also helps with content because it's nice to have a variety of stuff in the post.
Yeah.
But yeah, painting is definitely my favourite part. I think it's because it's almost like a little bit of therapy, because you can sit down and you can just lose yourself in the painting and put it into something creative and nice that you enjoy doing.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, I love listening to the audiobooks. I'm like, listen to them a lot. Like, all the time. In the car, walking dogs. Like, all the time I've got an audiobook on the go, and I go through them pretty quickly. So I'd say like I started audiobooks at the start of lockdown, so 2020 March. So that's like 3 years and a few months.
3 years, yeah.
And I've gone through all of the Horus Heresy series and the Siege of Terra, most of Gotrek and Felix, but yeah, a lot of other like just random ones here and there. Like all of Eisenhorn and Ravenna. Yeah, I burned through them pretty quick.
Yeah.
But I just love them. I just think they're really, really great. And like, because like I'm not the quickest reader, so being able to listen to an audiobook, you can just get through the story so much faster. And the quality that they put out is really good. Like, they've got some really great narrators. And like, obviously, the lore behind the 40K and the fantasy and Age of Sigmar universes are just really, really good. And help inspire painting too, so.
Definitely.
Bonus.
Yeah, I find it really difficult when I listen to a book. Say if I like listen to that and I go all the way back to the start of Horus Heresy, I'm like, oh, I could repaint Essence of Horus army now, or Alina Wolves army. I'm like, don't do that. Don't do that. And then you read another book, you're like, oh, I could go and paint Necrons now. I get swayed so easily by whatever I listen to.
Yeah. It's like every time you finish a book, it's like at the moment I'm listening to Titanicus, and it's all, Warlord Titans and Titans. I'm like, okay, well, I'm not going to buy a Warlord Titan, but there is Adeptus Titanicus, and obviously there's Legions Imperialis coming out. So
yeah,
it's fueling the fire for some inspiration for those. I think. But yeah, I'm not going to paint a Warlord Titan. That's madness.
I would love to paint a Warlord Titan. I like big models. I'm a big Knights player. I've been repainting my Chaos Knights ready for 10.
I've seen them really nice.
They've got a points nerf today as we're recording this, literally about an hour a bit ago. They got a bit of a points nerf, but I love them. Big models are awesome. So yeah, if I could get a Warlord Titan, I'd love it. I'd love it so much.
Did you go to Warhammer Fest? Yeah.
No, I wasn't able to make it this year.
They had the Titan Owners Club there. and they had them all on the flight doing a massive game. But they were doing it, they were using the Adeptus Titanicus rules, but playing it with the full size Titans.
It was, it's just mad. Yeah. That's mad.
It was brilliant. It was such a, it was such a good spectacle to watch. But it was like seeing them all there in person, all painted up, and the painted up to a really, really good quality as well. And it's like, it could be tempting, very tempting. But
yeah, they're like little canvases. I'm not sure that my painting would ever be good enough. So I'd have to really improve my painting. Because people paint like little portraits on them, little like dioramas, and like all painted on them. It's just they always look crazy.
Yeah, they're amazing. It's like you say, they're a bit of like a blank canvas, and the amount of like freehand and stuff that people paint on them is pretty cool. Also, you could just do lots of it, like rust and grime and.
Yeah, like they look cool, cool, grimy. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe one day, we'll see. I don't know. The problem is, I wouldn't know where to store it. Like, they are big, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. They are massive,
I wouldn't have space for models as it is.
I think, aren't the Adeptus Titanicus ones, aren't they? Is it the Warlord Titans? The big, they're almost like knight sized in just themselves anyway.
Yeah, they're like a quarter of the size of the full ones. So, they're not small models.
They're still big. Yeah, they're still a lot of space.
Like the, what's it called? The Warbringer Titan, the one with the big Canonite's top. That one's like the size of a Dreadnought, like of a Redemptor Dreadnought. So, they're not small. The real size one's like four times that size and obviously weigh a lot more because they're resin. So,
So, I think Dave was posting one, Mini Wargaming Dave was posting one the other day, and he's like picking it up, and you can see, like, he's a fairly strong guy, and he's just like, geez.
They are beastly. I mean, I'd be scared to pick it up as well, because it's like, if you pick up a normal model, it's like, what's the most expensive normal plastic model? Probably like 125 quid, something like that.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
So, and it's quite lightweight, reasonably, and you can hold it in probably one hand quite comfortably.
Yeah.
Well, like a Titan's like 10 times the price. You can't hold it in one hand. What if you drop it?
And resin's not known for being that well dropped. However.
No. I'm not sure how it works with like with those sizes of the plates and stuff on it. Like, how do they chip or would they like actually break? I mean, I don't want to find out.
I don't want to even think about it. It's terrifying. Yeah. The amount of money that sinks into each one of those panels.
Yeah, crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. Just the fact that like people get them and they are not typical resin. They come a little bit warped or stuff like that, and they have to be like heating them up and then I'm just like, oh my god! I just Warlord Titans like $2,000 or something like that.
Yeah,
I just couldn't do it. Yeah. Terrified.
It's crazy. I mean, they are like a proper construction project as well because of the weight and you have to put rods in them and use like proper like adhesives and all sorts. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, not for me. Maybe, well, I don't know. I say not for me, but never say never, I suppose.
Yeah. If someone offered you the project,
I mean, that would be pretty tempting then. I don't know, though. I might just be too nervous, to be honest. Like, I don't know.
Is it worse then? Because then it's not your money. Somebody else is putting their money in your hands.
Exactly, I've done a few commissions and it is a bit like nerve-wracking to do them, even on smaller models, Just doing it on like a squad of space marines, like it's someone else's stuff. You don't want to mess it up. You want to do it nicely into the standard they're happy with. And obviously, if they're paying you, you want to make sure they're happy with it. So, it's doing that on a bigger scale is definitely scary.
You said that you sort of got all sorts of crazy different models, different armies, stuff like that. Have you got a favorite army? I think I know what the answer is. I think.
So, I think I've got favourite armies. I think Ultramarines are probably like one of my most fun things to paint, or Tyranids. Ultramarines or Tyranids. I love painting both of those. Just because, I think it's just the schemes like that I use on them. Like, I really enjoy them, really comfortable with them. I could probably do them quite quickly, and it's like a nice comfort zone. If we're talking about the lore of the models and like which are my favorite army in the actual books and stuff, it's not really an army, but like the Inquisition. If they got a full army release, I would be all over that, because yeah, just like the individuality of them and like how they kind of like skirt the rules a bit, some of them, and
yeah,
they're a bit sort of, well, they've got all sorts of weird, wonderful stuff going on because they're, you know, they're inquisitors. They can kind of do what,
yeah,
you know, it's yeah, I would love that, but yeah, I don't, in terms of actually collecting an army, hard to say. There's too many good models, so it's hard, yeah, hard to pick one. Yeah, I think probably Ultramarines or Terminators. Is that what you were going to say?
I thought you'd go down the Ultramarines route. Yeah, yeah, I thought that would be the one.
Yeah, they've got some great models, and just the blue. I think the good thing with it is the blue for like that I use for Ultramarines, it goes really, really well with like rust. So it pops really nicely on a model, and then obviously to have all the grime and stuff, so that comes through. I also really like Sons of Horus as well.
Okay.
Yeah, I like them in the Siege of Terror books, especially like where Abaddon sort of, I won't say too much because I don't want to like give any spoilers, but obviously Abaddon is in the Siege of Terror, and his character gets developed a lot more in those books, and he starts to come out on his own, like, you know, come out from under the wing of Horus, and really like that sort of character development for him and the rest of the Sons of Horus. And obviously, like, I don't want to say too much, but I think we all know what happens with the Sons of Horus after Siege of Terror. So, you know, where they go from there to what they are in the 40,000, you know, 40k universe. Like, yeah, I like that. So, they're another one of my favorites.
Okay. Nice. So, there's some solid choices.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed the Sons of Horus as they were as Lunar Wolves. Yeah. I think when they started to transition into being the Sons of Horus, I think what most people, I kind of grew this sort of hatred towards them. And Abaddon was a strange one for me because I felt like I really enjoyed him in the first sort of book and a half. And then it felt like, I'm not going to spoil the first three books because nobody's listened to them at this point or read them at this point. Go and read them because I'm not going to spoil them. But when Horus gets stabbed and nearly dies, I feel like the change in Abaddon as a character is, it feels like super dramatic for me and almost like out of character, which I guess it's kind of supposed to be in it to a point, but I struggled with that quite a lot. And Loken really quickly became sort of my favourite Lunar Wolf in that, and that carries on through all the way through because he's such a cool character.
Very cool character, yeah. He it's very hard to talk about, isn't it, without giving too many spoilers.
definitely.
It's something as well, I found this quite interesting because I got into the hobby not that long ago, so then like I powered through all the audiobooks, and it's really easy to assume that people have read or listened to them all, and they haven't. So then when you start talking to people about them, and it's really easy to give them spoilers, and they're like, what? You're like, that, no, I shouldn't have said that, sorry.
I'm probably one of the people, so I started playing 40k at the start of 8th edition, so probably not that long before you. Really,
yeah,
and yeah, I've not. I mean, we got into COVID. I still had to work my job. I got a dog and I got a kid, so my chance to read or listen to books disappeared. So yeah, I've listened to sort of the first four or five in Horus Heresy, and then I decided to skip to the end. So I've listened to most of the ones for Siege of Terror. But I'm a big Dark Angels fan, so I've gone. I kind of went, okay, I'm not going to listen to any of that, but I'm going to listen to specifics about like the Dark Angels. And I've listened to quite a few of the Necron books as well, and the Necron books are a really good read.
Yeah, the Necron books are really good. Like, I think they're really interesting because when you look at the Necron models, you just look at them like, oh, they're just like space robots. They've got no personality or whatever. Like, not very interesting. Like, but the models themselves are interesting, but they're not like, they don't look like they're actual characters. They just look like, space robots, space Terminators. You know, you know what I mean. Like Terminator, like the movie.
Yeah,
like Terminator, like
the movie, not like 40k Terminator. Yeah.
You know, they don't come across as having a lot of character. And then when you actually read the books, they've got loads of character. And really interesting.
Ooh, yeah.
The Infinite and the Divine is like a perfect example of it.
Such a good book.
It's great because of it gives you a different sense of scale to, obviously, like, without giving any spoilers again, like the book spans, I don't know how many, it's like thousands of years, I think, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it's like millennia, isn't it? Yeah.
And that gives you a way different sense of scale to listening to. I mean, obviously, space marines live a long time, and people like normal humans in the 40,000 universe live like a few hundred years with like rejuvenate treatments and stuff like that. So, yeah, they live longer, but like Necrons live like forever.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's really interesting listening to a book from their perspective. This is like the things that they can do, and like, you know, that book's a really good one. Definitely like high up on the recommendation list. Also, it's a great audiobook because it's just like it's performed really, really well. So,
oh yeah, the narrator for that is fantastic.
Yeah, I really like that one. There's
I
think I'm going to do a Necron tutorial soon. I think because they're a really fun one to paint in my style as well, with like all the rust and grime and everything. It goes together really well. So, yeah, I'll be doing that soon, I think.
I look forward to that. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. Talking about your painting, you're very well known for your amazing painting skill. It goes without saying, I've got to say. Is there sort of one or a few sort of key things that you think really changed or sort of improved your painting ability?
Yeah, so it's interesting, like, thinking back to sort of, sounds a bit strange, but like my painting journey, I suppose. Like, so when I first got into it, I like watched loads of YouTube videos, different like creators, and like just sort of took in as much as I could. And I didn't, obviously, when you first start, you don't have a particular style. You just want to paint cool stuff. And, you know, you might have like a few ideas of schemes, or you might see something and want to copy it and do it, or make it your own, or just try out a scheme. So when I first got into it, I was like just doing all different sorts of things, and I sort of like followed a few guides and I got some results that I was happy with. And then obviously when you like spend time on Instagram and you're looking through all different people's posts and like some different techniques, like see, oh, look at that, it's like non-metallic metal, that looks amazing, like, you know, it looks a bit scary though, it looks a bit difficult to do that. Then like you sort of think, oh well, maybe I'll give it a go. You sort of like try and find a guide of how to do it, and like watch a few videos, or, you know, you might subscribe to someone's Patreon, and then you go, oh, okay, right, okay, give it a go, and pick a model to do it on. It might not work the first time, and, you know, you do it a few more times, or spend a load of time on the model, and you know, really power through and do it well. And then you sort of, after a while, you sort of build up like a repertoire of like different skills of different ways you can paint. Or if you look at a model and you think, oh, okay, well, looking at that, I want to paint this part in a certain way, and you've got like an idea of how to do that.
Yeah.
And then over time, obviously, you can build into your own style then. So like you can look at then, oh, well, I like a more grimy style of model, and or I want something that's a bit more like grimdark, like that aesthetic. So you can sort of start learning how to use products that might do that. And so I think like going over that journey, like a few like key points were like, when I wanted to learn non-metallic metal, I subscribed to NRM Paints, the Patreon, and he does like PDF tutorials, and they're really easy to follow, and they're really step-by-step, and it's like a lot of glazing between different colors and shading things. And that's how I learned to paint non-metallic metal. And I did that on Gilliman.
Okay.
So I did that for March from a Crag. I think it was in 2021. Yeah, so that's what I did. Like, I think that's one like the first moment when I really like pushed myself really hard to learn a new hard skill that I found really daunting.
Yeah.
Learned like a load of new things with it. So like learned a lot about brush control and lighting and light placement and like materials on the model. Like, so how you paint things makes different materials look like different things. So like obviously how to make something more like metal or cloth or whatever, or frames, that kind of thing. So that, I think that was like one big turning point, like then, like in terms of improvement of skill. And then further down the line, like when I sort of found my own style. So there's a painter content creator called Grimdark Compendium. Like they are like an amazing Grimdark painter. And they paint really, really like dark, heavy Grimdark.
Yeah.
And I sort of like came across their stuff and I was like, oh, this is like really interesting and different. And then I started watching some of their videos on YouTube and like, oh, like, they're really interesting. The products they use are really different to like acrylics and use a lot of enamels and oils. Okay. That kind of like prompted me to try that. Because I'd seen Marco, not just Mecca. He he used a lot of oils in his work, but I'd never really tried them before that. So I'm kind of like aware that you could use them, but then seeing them in a style that really interested me, that's what sort of, I was like, oh, okay. So then I sort of fell in love with using Streak and Grime on models, which I use for a lot of models. Yeah, and then like learning that, how to use that product and how to apply it to a model and how to make a model look really, really grimy, but still bright, and all the materials on the model still look how you want them to look. So like taking the like information I learned from learning non-metallic metal and how to make materials look in a certain way, and then adding to that how to use different products to get like a really grimy look, and then those sort of combine together to sort of somewhere along the way get to where I am now. Yeah, I think there's entering Golden Demon, that was another big turning point, because it was like, so the first Golden Demon after lockdown in the UK, which was last October, I think it was.
Yeah.
So that was like the first time I'd seen in person like the really, really top end models, and it kind of blew my mind a bit, like not like, it's probably gonna sound weird, but like you don't really realize how good they are until you see them in person. To like, a photo will never ever do one of those models justice. You see it in person, like no photo will ever pick up all those details and give you a sense of the scale at which those details are painted. Yeah. And then you kind of look at those and then you reflect back onto your own painting and think, wow, like they are like so far ahead in whatever you're doing. But as long as you don't get daunted by that and you look at it and you go, okay, well, obviously I'm not going to be able to paint like the top painters. Like there's like they are too far ahead. Yeah, maybe one day after years of practice, which is what they've got. I might, you know, be able to be somewhere near them, maybe, you know, hopefully. But looking at them, looking at what they do, and just trying to take away little tips from them of like, oh, okay, well, why have they placed the light like this? What have they done to accentuate this part of the model here? Why have they done things in a certain way? And just trying to take that, what they've done there, and, you know, apply it a little bit to your own painting.
Yeah.
That was a big turning point, because it kind of made me realize, like, even though I paint in a very different style to a lot of people, there's still a lot of information you can take from them and apply it to your own work. Yeah. So like, obviously the most recent like ultramarines I've done are very different to the first one. So the first one was basically like a kind of brightish blue all over, and then loads of grime, which brought the shadows in. Whereas the more recent ones, I've added in a lot of like shadows and highlights before the grime, then tone the grime back because you don't need that as much, but it stand out more and draws the eye into the model more. And it's like learning that little thing. It doesn't take much longer to actually paint the model. So like the original ultramarine scheme that I did, basically I airbrushed like one color all over it, like one blue all over it. Whereas the new one is like, it's airbrushing three different blues. So like a dark, then a medium blue, and then a light blue in like a column. So it's not like a massive difference. It's just airbrushing two more colors, and it doesn't take much longer.
Yeah.
And that like amped up like that style so much just from, you know, like a tiny little change. But I wouldn't have known that change without seeing those models in person. So like, seeing Golden Demon in person was probably like the biggest level up moment, because it made me realize, actually, there's a lot more I can do with my style that I haven't explored yet.
I guess that's all part of the journey, isn't it? And Rosie had some cracking tips. Rosie paints 1.3. She paints, she does a lot of commission painting, but I think one of the best tips that she gave me was like taking those best models and like isolating parts of them, and then looking at it and going, oh, I see what they did there. I see how they did that. Yeah. So you don't, typically you sort of like, you look at the whole model and you go, yeah, I can't do that. That's just crazy. Yeah, that thing as a whole is just absolutely insane. Yeah. But then if you think, oh, I'll go and look at that chain. Oh, I see how they did that chain. I'll go and do my chain like that. So yeah, I guess it's kind of that building up and like you say, learning new styles, and just sort of, yeah, you look at a specific bit of it and go, oh yeah, I'll apply that technique. It's that toolbox approach towards it.
Yeah. And it's, I mean, that is all painting is really. It's like you just learn more and more how to do certain things. And like, obviously, as well as knowing the how, it's like having the mechanical ability to control a brush in a certain way. But that just comes with time and practice and, you know, more reps on the model, you know. That's all it is, really. You know, like, the more you do it, the better you'll get, as long as you're paying attention to it. And I think that's one of the things as well, like, actively wanting to improve. So rather than just painting and painting and painting, is when you are painting, if you do something, like, not be critical of yourself, because I think that's like a bad rabbit hole to get down, because you can get too bogged down and like too negative about it. But, you know, if you do paint something, look at how you painted it, and if it's not quite how you, if it's not something you're happy with, maybe just like, oh, okay, well, what am I going to do next time to make it so it is something I'm happy
with? Yeah.
You know, like, and then if you're unsure, if you look at something, you go, okay, well, I'm not happy about that, but I'm not really sure why. There's a lot of people out there as well who will really quite happily just
be like,
okay, well, have you tried doing this? Like, if you reach out to probably some of the top painters on Instagram or Twitter or wherever, and just like, oh, I'm like, really sorry to bother you, but please could you give me a hand with this model? Like, there's this bit I'm not sure about, and like, you know, would you be able to give me like 5 minutes of time just to tell me like how to improve that bit? They'll probably do it. Like, you know, they're really good with their time, and you know, I'm not saying like go and bother every single painter for every little tip, but you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of people out there in the community who will help you, and you know, it's all part of the community. Like, there's a lot of good people out there who will help you improve as long as you want to improve.
Yeah. Before we move on to my next section, I've got one more question to ask on this one. You've obviously painted all of the sort of new models that have come for 10th and they're like the Leviathan box set. Have you got a favourite model out of all of those?
Oh, yeah, the Psychophage. Love that model.
Really?
The big spider tyrannid with the spew and stuff out the top. And yeah, I really like that. It's just, I just like big monsters, really. Like, and it's a really big monster. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Like, the Marines are, obviously, I love Space Marines, but they're all just Space Marines. So, like, you know, they're not, they're new models, but they're not anything massively different. The Terminator Captain is incredible. I love that model. But yeah, I think the Psychophage is just, it's just a big scary monster. Like, it's got like tentacles coming out of its mouth. It's got spider legs. Yeah. It's spewing like some stuff out the top of it at you. Like, it's great.
Yeah, fair.
And it's a really good one to paint as well. Really fun. Because it's got like, from like a painting point of view. So the back of it, I don't really know like spider terminology, I suppose, but like the back of it where it's like, it's got like a big stinger thing on the back. That bit, it's got like a big fleshy part underneath. It's all like bulbous and horrible. So like painting that skin on that is really fun, and like you can get some nice like shading and like coloration in that. It's icky and gross and amazing.
Yeah, quite different from Space Marine, I guess.
I mean, it's eating a bit of a Space Marine, so that's kind of cool.
Still
painting a bit of power armor. So, yeah. I actually think I painted the Space Marine. I think I covered it all in, like, gunk.
Oh, nice.
So, But, yeah, it's a great model. Really like that one. Nice. I mean, the whole set's full of them, though. So many good ones.
Yeah, I love the new Tyranids. I've got the box, but I'm giving half the Tyranids away to my mate. And yeah, I think they're absolutely incredible models.
The Neurogons? The little tiny ones as well.
Oh, they're little.
They're very cute. They're very fun to paint as well. They're just so small and like Diddy.
Yeah.
I just keep thinking now, like, is the Psychophage my favourite? Yeah, I think it is. But they're all really good. The Neurotyrant's really cool as well. Like, the big floaty tentacle.
Yeah. Yeah, the big floating brain. Yeah. That's a really cool model.
It's great. I don't know. It's hard to pick a favorite because they're all so fun. And also, when you've got them all out in front of you on the table, it just looks great. All of them together. It's really good.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to breaking the box open. I've held off for now because I've been focused on my knights. Yeah. And I want to, Dark Angels and mop a little bit, so I've got some spares, bits of bobs from like the Deathwing Terminator set and stuff like that. Nice. So I'm gonna try and bat them. And for the first time, I'm gonna try and make green stuff or milliput capes.
Nice.
So that's a big thing. Not the Terminators have got capes on, they've not got any robes on, so I'm gonna try and make some of those, that's me trying to stretch those models and stretch myself.
Yeah. But Dark Angels do love their capes, don't they? So
They love robes, they love hoods, and they love being all secret.
Yeah.
And they love Terminators, yeah. So it's like perfect.
Yeah, ideal. And the new Terminators are really nice models, like the scale of them, and like, because the old Terminators were very like static as well in their pose. They've got like very dynamic ones, which is really nice. Like them a lot.
I saw them at my local Games Workshop. Because I've obviously seen them on various things on Instagram, but I think when you see them in person, they are chunky models as well. Yeah. I was just like, like I said, they're really dynamic. The poses are really, they are Terminators, but they are like what you kind of expect a Terminator to be. They're really cool.
Yeah, they're really nice. I assume they're going to do Assault Terminators at some point, which will be very cool with the new models, like Thunder Hammers and Big Shields and Lightning Claws. Oh, yeah. I'm all about that. And hopefully more weapon options as well. It'd be nice just to have more of those.
Yeah.
It's always nice to have options.
Yeah. As a Dark Angels player, again, or the Dark Angel Terminator kit has got all of the different heavy options. It's obviously all the heavy plasma flamers, everything like that. So, I'm looking forward to having those in. And hopefully they bring out the Deathwing Champion, with the one with like the two-handed halberd. I think that would look awesome.
That would look very cool. Models. Yeah, yeah. I like it when they release something new, like re-release something like Terminators, or they bring out like a new sort of like unit type, and then they can build on it and add more stuff of that type, like Blade Guard, I suppose. Like, I don't really know if they brought out more Blade Guard, but like when they re-released the actual Blade Guard box, that was very cool. And then obviously they did the Black Templar like Blade Guard as well. But it was like a unit of them, and they all had different weapons. Were they Blade Guard?
Yeah.
Or were they something that I can't remember now, but.
What are they? They're like the Crusader unit or something like that, aren't they? I'm not a Templars player, but
yeah.
I'm sure somebody will tell
us. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Someone will always tell you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's something you can rely on with any fandom, isn't it? Like, they'll let you know.
yeah, definitely. Yeah, I love the Blade Guard. Yeah. So, yeah, any changes. I wish, that was probably one of the things that I felt like they missed out on, was when they brought out the Lion and his retinue. I really wish that they'd done like what are the Ultramarine ones called?
The Honor Guard.
Victory's Honor Guard. I wish they'd done something similar for with the Blade Guard rather than just them being Blade Guard. I think that would have been cool as Dark Angel specific.
It would have been that would have been very cool. It was because the Blade Guard are great, and obviously they've got robes, which is good for Dark Angels. So it's nice, but they're not Dark Angel specific. So maybe if they brought out. If they just did Blade Guard with some like upgrade bits that could go on and make them more Dark Angels-y, that'd be cool. But obviously they went with the way they were. But
maybe they'll bring out something new, and I'm hoping more Deathwing with the new Terminators, because I think they are going to be beautiful.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, really obviously we've got the Lion, and even they can't just release the Lion; they're giving more.
No.
So, did you manage to get a copy of the Lion?
No, not yet, but it's supposed to, as a recording, it's coming out in like 3 days, apparently, for pre-order.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm really hoping this time.
Yeah. I mean, I think they were just pumping everything into Leviathan for like production.
Yeah.
So, which is understandable because like it's the new edition, it's the biggest release.
Yeah, it's huge. Yeah.
And obviously now they can catch up with everything else, that's good. But yeah, the Lion model is really good. Have you listened to the audiobook for the Lion?
Yeah, I have. It's such a
love that. I really like it because he, obviously, in Horus Heresy, he's just really grumpy. And
he's an ass. Yeah, he's an ass in Horus Heresy.
And now he's grown up and he's actually like sensible and like understanding. Yeah. And he's got emotions, which is, different. I like it a lot. And Mike Brooks did a great job on that book. I really, really, really enjoyed that. Probably one of my favorites probably one of my favorite audiobooks, to be fair. It's really good.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I just think it was like a good mix of, obviously, it's reintroducing an old character with character development. All the action scenes were great. So that's like, if you haven't got good action scenes, they can't be a good 40k book. That's a bit of an overstatement. But, it kind of has to have good action scenes.
It has to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just like, obviously, all the little hints here and there of like what's going on in the Imperium and looking forward to seeing what happens next with him.
Yeah. Him and Gulliman meeting is going to be, interesting.
Yep. That's going to be an interesting one. I'm not, actually, I won't say it because I was just about to say something about the end of the book, but the end of the book, the very last, I think it's the very last chapter. I think it might be the epilogue, is really cool. It's got a very cool moment between two characters. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, I think like pretty much the last, oh, I think it's like the last sentence basically sums it up for me.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it's a great book.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a dog interest player, obviously, it was like, yeah, this is perfect.
Yeah.
And, yeah. I'm glad they really went down with it.
Yeah. Like, it, I mean, it's literally made for you. It's, look, yeah. Yeah. It's,
yeah.
It's going to be very interesting going forward.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we'll move away from 40K and painting as a thing, as much as I'd like to carry on talking about it, and we'll talk more the community content creation side, because that's a big thing as well. So what made you start wanting to create content and then carry on to where you've got to now?
So to begin with, I just started an Instagram account just to sort of track my own progress. So I just started posting photos and I literally posted a photo. I was trying to post like a photo every day just so I could keep track of what I was doing. And I started it just after like the first lockdown in the UK started. So mainly so I could look back on what I've done, keep track of what I was doing. But it was also like a way of keeping myself on track, because I'm very good at picking up a new hobby and then doing it for a little bit of time and then just it falling off.
Yeah.
Which obviously it hasn't for Warhammer. I think Warhammer's a bit different because it's not just a hobby. It's like, you know, it is.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah. I just started the Instagram just for that, really, to like sort of keep myself on track. And then over time, just it grew a bit and I got some followers. And then I know it's like some people asked me like how I'd painted things. And I was like, oh, that's a bit weird because like I'm just like painting what other people have told me to do, really. And then like, so, oh, well, I think, I'm trying to think how long it took me before I started on YouTube. It was quite a while. I think it was about a year or so. So I'd already done quite a bit. And then I just decided, oh, you know what? Let's just do a YouTube channel. Why not? Like people ask me for stuff and like how I painted things. So might as well. And started doing bits and pieces on there. And it's kind of one of those things as well where if you do post to social media and then get like positive feedback, you get likes and following you, you end up, it's like a positive feedback loop, because you get likes that, you know, makes you want to paint more, and then you know, you get more likes and you build up a following and it just kind of snowballs. And I've just enjoyed it like every step of the way, really. Like there have been moments where I've been like, oh god, right, like I need to post something on Instagram, or like, oh, I've got this YouTube video and I've got to edit it and like it takes ages, I've just really, really enjoyed the whole process. So it's always been like, I just want to do more and more and more. And yeah, it's like just from that initial, like starting Instagram just to keep track of it myself. And then you get a few likes and it builds up and snowballs. And then before you know it, like, yeah, doing well, whatever it is I'm doing now.
Yeah, I mean, you've grown a massive following over that sort of time. I mean, you've what, nearly 30K followers.
Yeah, it's like 28, something like that. So yeah,
and getting close to what, 10K on YouTube.
Yeah,
as well,
I think it's about 7.5, something like that. So yeah,
so it's quite a big following in a relatively short amount of time.
Yeah, it's kind of shocked, really.
So is it? There's obviously a lot of people who are trying to emulate that and trying to do similar things. Have you got any particular advice if someone were trying to do that?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is to be consistent. So try and post regularly. You know, try and make your posts so that people can recognize them as your posts. So sometimes it's very, I mean, you don't, all these things I'm going to say are the things that I found helped me. So obviously, there's lots of different ways that you can find success in doing social media and the hobby. Like, you only have to look at different people's profiles and you'll see different content there. So there's lots of different ways you can do it. But the way I've found it is, so I tend to use the same background on a lot of my photos. So it's like it's supposed to be black card, but it's like a dark gray card. And it, use that and then mini in front of it. Use the same settings on my camera to do that kind of thing. So a lot of my posts look very similar, so you kind of see, if you see that background, it kind of like recognizes, it resonates.
Yeah, it's you. It's my content. Yeah.
And I try and post, you know, at least a few times a week. For Instagram specifically, one thing that's like quite important is to make sure you're using as many of the Instagram features as you can. So posts, hashtags, obviously on your post, that helps. Your story. So a good like little sort of habit to get into is like, if you do a post, do your post, put your hashtags on there, and then share it to your story straight away. So that like it's an extra feature that you're putting on there. Do reels. Yeah. So you don't have to do anything particularly special. You could just literally do a reel of holding your phone on record and just doing like a little 360 of a mini in front of it. But, you know, obviously this is based on painting sort of thing. Obviously for gaming, it'd be different. Yeah. Using the like audio on reels. So if you go onto the reels part of Instagram and you just scroll through, you'll quite quickly notice like there's audio which comes up more often than not. So if you just use that audio, that's like a trending audio. Like, there's like, I think a lot of people make it like this big mysterious thing of like, oh, there's like these trending audios and you have to use. It's not, it's just like, these are the audios that are doing well at the moment. So if you put a video out there that's got that audio on it, then it's going to help it. Like, it's not, yeah. You know, quality content, like try not to post just sort of trash content. Like I do it a lot. I know I do it. Like I'll repost stuff and, you know, I'll post things that'll be like, oh, that was kind of just a filler post. And it shouldn't really do it, but as long as it's still good quality, then it's not really the end of the day, it's not that bad.
Yeah. Your filler content's better than my content. So that's...
No, it's not. It's all different. It's just everyone's content is good. Yeah. So, you know. Interacting with people as well. So like going into people's comments, commenting something on their stuff, that's a big thing. And replying to comments, you know, people comment on your stuff, that helps a lot as well. Collaborations with people as well. So like if you find someone that you get on with well with on Instagram and you're chatting along, you know, do a collab post because it helps a lot. Like just getting that, you know, that feature used and getting your stuff on their page and their stuff on your page, that really helps. Just try and, I don't want to say like you like dive into the app and use everything in it because obviously like you can get lost in it and that's not ideal, but trying to use as much of the features in the app as possible while keeping it reasonable for yourself is like, you know, that's probably a good idea. The dogs are barking. Can you hear the dogs?
Yeah, a little bit. It's all right. I'm amazed mine's been this quiet, to be honest.
Alfie? It stopped.
He's like, what? Yeah. What have I done?
Yeah.
You're talking, why can't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, like using as many features as you can of Instagram helps. YouTube, I'm trying to kind of work that out myself because like I know obviously I'm on like nearly 7.5K, but I feel like I haven't really like fully grasped how to grow well on there yet.
Okay.
So I think with YouTube, it's a little bit different. So obviously you can do shorts and stuff on YouTube, but they don't seem to be as well received now as Reels do on Instagram.
Yeah.
So I think longer form video is what I'm trying to do more of on YouTube. So trying to get back into doing more tutorials and things like that, because that's where I saw the most growth when I was doing that.
Mm, yeah.
But that is very time consuming. So like, yeah, you know, recording a reel takes, well, you can do one in less than a minute. If you want to, you open up reels, yeah, set it to a song, record a little spinny of a mini and away you go. You know. Yeah. Really done. Whereas like actually long form content, it's a lot harder.
Yeah.
So yeah, like growing on YouTube is something I'm trying to kind of work out myself. But I think long form content is where I'm going to be finding the most growth. Twitter is a bit of a weird one.
actually, yeah, I'm not even on Twitter. I don't go near
that. Yeah, it's I don't really know how I've grown to where I am on Twitter really. I've got like 5,500 followers on Twitter and I'm like, what? How did that happen? But I think, well, Twitter's a bit of a weird one now as well, especially like it's all up in the air with everything that's happening with it. So yeah, I don't know really with that. Twitter, I think I really like Twitter because it's nice because you can actually interact directly with people like a lot easier than any other platform. But obviously it's kind of just all over the place in terms of, well, a lot of different aspects of it now.
Yeah.
It'd be nice if it sort of goes, it'd be nice if it kind of stabilizes or if a different platform comes out that's basically like a Twitter clone that's not crazy. That'd be nice.
I've heard Facebook are making one.
Or yeah, Meta. Called Threads, I think. And then there's another one called Blue Sky, which is supposed to be very similar to Twitter, but it's only invite only at the moment. So it's like in beta.
Okay.
Yeah. And I haven't got an invite for that yet, so not really sure what it's actually like once you get in. But it's a shame because Twitter, it has been really, really good, and like it's been great for like connecting people. But it's, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go with it, really. Yeah.
I was thinking it could go either way at the moment. Yeah. It's obviously, it's been so big for so long. It's weird to see where it is at the moment. So I guess it could go back.
Yeah, it's a very, very
odd Elon Musk odd that, I guess.
Yeah. It is a bit weird. But yeah, I think Instagram is like, it's my primary platform. It's where I've got the most followers. It's where I get the most interaction. It's what I probably put more time into than the other platforms. Also, if you want to grow on TikTok, you can just use your reels off Instagram and just post them to TikTok. So that works quite well. Like, I don't really use TikTok because I've got a really bad habit. If I do go onto TikTok, I get into like a rabbit hole of just like scrolling through for hours.
Yeah.
So my TikTok usage is pretty much limited to take my reel off Instagram, put it onto TikTok, and then close the app and forget about it. Go on there very occasionally and then reply to some comments. But yeah. So yeah, if you want to grow on TikTok, that seems to work out because I've got like, 4,500 followers on there, so that seems to be going okay. I don't know. Like, I don't know if that is good for TikTok or not, really.
No idea. Again, TikTok's not. I should be a boomer. I think I'm a millennial, but I should be a boomer. I use Instagram and that's about it.
Instagram's great. I mean, like, for what I do, obviously, like, posting pictures of minis and little videos of minis is ideal. That's, you know, what I enjoy the most, so it works really well. But yeah, I think the real big thing is like being consistent with your content, using a lot of the features of Instagram as they're supposed to be, interact with a lot of people, and just try and do quality content. Like, don't really try not to get like bogged down into like, oh, the algorithm's doing this or that or the other. Like, yeah, there is an algorithm there, but if you put out good quality content, you interact with people, and you know, use the features that are there to be used, your content will get found. It might take a while, you know, but it's just, you know, that's kind of, I think that's the best way of doing it, really. Like, and also, like, if your content's not doing as well as you think it should be, like, you can always reach out to people and say, why don't you like this content? What could I do better? You know, and that's a good way of interacting with the community. So, you know, try and think of ways you can interact with the community to make your content better while still making content about your content. Try different things, but it's a bit of a minefield, really. But the way I find it best is just like I said, be consistent, use the features, and interact with people.
Yeah, it's all solid advice. I'll try and use some of it myself. Anyone that sort of goes on your Instagram or kind of has followed you for a while has seen that you've been able to meet some cool people, go to some really, really cool events and stuff like that. Has there been any particular event or time that you would say has sort of been your highlight through the past 3 and a bit years of doing it?
Warhammer Fest, probably. So, like, I was speaking to Rach about it, and it's really easy when you've got, like, followers on Instagram. You kind of forget that, like, each one of those followers is a person.
Yeah.
It's just a number on your phone screen, so you don't really kind of understand it. And then when you go to an event and you're like meeting people in person and they know you from your Instagram and like you're standing there and people will come up and say hello to you. Like, they say hello to Rach way more because she's way more recognizable than me. And like,
it's the hair, something about the hair.
So it's just really, it's kind of humbling that like people know your work and have seen your stuff and, you know, like, they're there in person. They come and chat to you, and it's like, oh, wow, actually, like, there is a community here of actual people. It's not just, like, talking on the internet. You know, that was kind of like an eye-opener. And, that was amazing. And also, having my model in the Golden Demon cabinet and people taking photos of it on Instagram and tagging me in it, that was mad. Because it's like...
Yeah, people searching for yours. Out of the hundreds that were there, people
were looking for your tagging model. My dreadnought on their Instagram. I was like, oh, wow, actually, that's really, really cool. Because it kind of brings home, like, sometimes it's very easy to get wrapped up in the, like, just making content and just trying to get views and likes and stuff. And then when you actually see that it affects people and they're paying attention to it rather than it just being a viewer, a like, or a comment on the screen.
Yeah.
And it's like someone's actually looking at your stuff. It's like a really weird difference, like a mental difference in your head that it's like, oh, actually, like, it's getting through to people. And it's just like, it's such a nice feeling. It's like sometimes I get people who will like drop me a message saying, oh, I've used your like tutorial for this. And it's like, that's amazing. Like, someone actually like trusted my tutorial of like me just like painting something randomly on the internet. They've trusted that on models they bought with paint they bought because of the tutorial and painted something. It's like, oh, wow, that's kind of, that's really, really cool. Like, it's pretty amazing. Also, like, meeting cool people at events, like, obviously, there's so many people in the community who are amazing, but it's weird when you go to an event and you're in a room with, like, these people that, when I first got into the hobby, like, these are the people I was watching on YouTube, and I was like, oh, my God, these are amazing painters. Like, this is ridiculous. Like,
yeah,
what, like, they're like, it's like, they're celebrities, really. Like, I was at the Horus Heresy Open Day, like, when was that? Like, last year?
It's quite a while ago,
May, I think it was. Yeah, it was last May. And I was there, and I was just chatting to Richard Gray. And I was like
what's going on here?
sat there with a coffee, chatting to Richard Gray. And I was like, at one point, I was like, what? Like, like, this is Richard Gray. Like,
yeah.
Wouldn't say a sword. He's like one of the best painters in the world. And he's just sat there chatting to me about, like, general chit chat. It's like, what? This is amazing.
I absolutely know that feeling.
It's like, I think that's one of the best things about the hobby is that how accessible it is to meet these people. So, like I was saying earlier about being able to just drop a message to top painters and be like, oh, could you just give me a little bit of feedback on this model? Because I'm not sure, like, you know, how to do something better. It is that accessible that you can literally just drop messages to people and they're there. They're real people. They're not, you know, it's not like you're trying to like DM Cristiano Ronaldo. No. You know, it doesn't matter. That's never going to get read. But like, you know, these are real people. They're there. They're at events. You can go up to them. You can speak to them. And, you know, they're amazing people as well. Like, I haven't met one which has not been a pleasure to speak to. Like, it's crazy, really. Like, I sometimes do have to pinch myself because I'm like, I'm in a room with all these amazing people. Like, this can't be real, surely. Like, it does give you a little bit of imposter syndrome sometimes because you're like, I just paint these grimy models for Instagram and like, then there's like, you know, Slayer Sword winners and like, the cool paint guys and like, it's like, what? mad. But,
That's very much the feeling that of me doing this podcast. I never expected it to be where I am now, but it's the fact that like I message you and you're like, yeah, let's do this. Yeah, it feels weird. Like, obviously I interviewed Fletcher 2 episodes ago. That was a weird moment. Like, me wargaming were the first sort of group that I watched, and then it was Tabletop Tactics. And so to get like Fletch on, and spoilers, literally tomorrow as I'm recording this, I'm going to be chatting with Chef, who is like one of the first people that I watched on YouTube. It's just like, what's going on? I don't know.
Yeah, it's mad, isn't it?
I barely have any followers. I don't have a huge amount of listeners, but it's just like, I'm like, yeah, let's just have a chat.
Yeah.
So cool.
It's amazing, isn't it? Like, but that is, as I say, one of the best things about the hobby is how accessible it is to meet those people and chat to them.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, for now at least, the hobby is getting more and more popular. So, big names are going to get bigger, but you know, I still think for the most part they're pretty accessible, and you can just go and chat to them, say hello. It's amazing, and
you see it all the time. Like Mini Wargaming Dave, I'll use example. I've messaged him before and stuff like that, and he's fairly quick at like responding and stuff like that. It's just like you've got hundreds of thousands of like subscribers on YouTube, and like the amount of live views and stuff. They're just like, let's just chat. It's a really cool hobby for that.
Yeah.
Really cool.
I think it's because we're all hobbyists at heart. And like, even like the biggest names in the hobby still just love the hobby so much and they just want to talk about it.
Yeah.
And it's great.
Yeah. I mean, this podcast is it's the amount of time. Obviously, it takes up your time. It takes up a lot of people's time. But it's like after almost every single episode, I'm like, yeah, thank you very much. And I was like, yeah, it's like an hour and a half, 2 hours of chatting Warhammer. Like, well, why would you not want to do it?
Exactly. Which,
yeah, it's quite fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's just brilliant. Like, we all love it. Like, we all love Warhammer so much, and it's nice to be able to be in a position where, like, I'm fortunate that I can go to an event and see so many other people that love Warhammer and chat to them all, and you know, it's great. Like, and when I got into the hobby, like, I never in a million years thought that would happen. Like,
absolutely,
yeah, it's bonkers, really.
Yeah. Do you think, like, regaining your following, do you think that's affected how you go to events and stuff like that, or how you view events, or how you approach going to them?
So, not really. Like, in some ways it has. So, for example, like at Warhammer Fest, we were taken there by Games Workshop. So, there's some things we had to do for Games Workshop whilst we were there, and there was like some things that we got from being there. But on the most part, I'm just absolutely buzzed to go to any event. Really, I want to go there and just see all the stuff and like meet people, chat to people, and like interact with people. And yeah, like after Warhammer Fest, there was a bit of like negativity about like the stuff that was there and like the queues and stuff. And I get that I understand there wasn't as many things as people thought there could have been, and there's a lot of queue time. But the event for me was, like, it couldn't have been better, because I was in a room with like, what, 10,000 Warhammer fans, and I got to chat to like all these people who love the same thing that I love, and like I got to see some cool models as well, like there's the reveals, and like saw the Titans and Gorn Demon. But being in a room with that many people who all love Warhammer, who are all happy just in chat, and like, that was like, that's perfect. That is my ideal, like, ideal event. So, if anything, like, gaining my following just made it like 10 times better going to an event. Like, I've got more people I can speak to. It's brilliant. I don't think, like, there's not, like, it's, I'm trying to think if there's like any negative. It's not, no. Like, for me personally, like, going to an event, like, with a bigger following has been amazing, just because I get, like, I've got more opportunity to speak to more people. Yeah. Like, it's great, yeah. Like,
wicked.
Not gonna lie, it's bloody good.
Wicked. Do you think you would, obviously you said you have an actual job, this isn't your job. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's any, you would want it to become your job, or do you think you'd always want there to be a middle ground where it is still your hobby and not necessarily something you rely on money for?
It's a tough one. So, my actual job, I work with my family, so I'm in a family business. So it's very difficult to ever see like working in the hobby to get to the point where I would be like, oh yeah, I'm going to leave my family business for it.
Yeah.
So I'm in a bit of a weird situation with that, like in general. I think if I didn't have that, then I would probably want to make it like a career. But like, I don't know what, I can't really envision what that would mean for me doing the hobby. So like, would I want to do it as content creating, like create YouTube videos and that kind of thing is the job, or do it as like tuition, you know, one-on-one online tuition? I don't know, really. Like, it's a tricky one. So I think that one of the bits which is like makes it hard for me to think about is, obviously working in a family business, the job security is, well, you know, it's, as long as your business is doing well, like, you know, it's pretty solid. So the idea of being in a space where like I'm not, like I haven't got a paycheck coming in unless I make content, which I suppose at the end of the day, that's the same as like any other job. Like, you don't do your job, you're not getting money. But it's a very scary thought of like, oh, like I've got to rely on people giving me money for the content I produce.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I haven't really got any like qualms about like it being the hobby being part of a job, like, because I just love it. So I don't think it would make any difference in terms of that aspect. But trying to work out how to like monetize it or make it feasible to live off, I think that'd be a bit tricky.
Yeah.
I think if I was going to go, like, really go for that route, I would do, like, tuition would be the thing that I would try and do the most. Because I think that would be cool. Like, yeah, interacting with people, like, doing one-on-one online lessons, that kind of thing. Which I'm starting to do a bit more now, anyway, but I'm keeping it very limited.
Okay.
I don't want to do, you know, I don't want to, like, stack up hours and hours and hours of it and, you know, but doing it something a little bit on the side of an evening or a weekend, you know, that's fun and that's nice.
Anyway, she's swanning around the country as she does.
Yeah. Yeah. She's off everywhere. It's like
she's all over the place, though,
yeah,
isn't she?
Yeah, she's in, well, I think, Liverpool today, and then London tomorrow, and then where was she last week? Was she, I can't remember where she was last week. Leeds, I think, and yeah. She's all over the place for the job.
Yeah.
So I'm just here at home with the dogs. I'm happy. I feel a bit sorry for her, really. It's like I get to sit at home and just hobby and, you know, do that kind of thing, and she has to go travelling everywhere, so. But she has got a painting case. That, have you seen the Frontier painting cases?
No, I've not seen them.
They're really cool. They're like these really nice handcrafted wooden boxes.
Yes, I have. Yes, I have seen them. Yeah, like
drawers
and
stuff. She's got one of those, and it's proper smart. So she takes that away with her and a little bit of hobby here and there as she can. So I don't envy her, though. I'd rather be there.
Yeah, I used to travel a lot with work, and I'm glad that I don't anymore. It's too much.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Like I live, I think it's like if there's no traffic, it's about 12 minutes from like my doorstep to work. So it's like
nice.
Yeah, I'm happy with that. It's another perk.
Yeah. Okay, we'll move away from content creation and community side now, and talk about a little bit of real life and the real you. First thing. Congratulations. This is way, way down the line. For those who aren't aware, for some reason, if you're listening to this and you got this far, so you're getting married in 5 months? Was it 5 months? Yesterday, day before?
Yeah, less than 5 months now, which is, that's going around quick. Yeah.
I bet, yeah.
Yeah, it is, because we got engaged in, Christmas Day last year. So, yeah, it seems to have flown by, really. Yeah, I can't believe 7 months we've done since then. That's mad.
Yeah.
But, yeah, thank you very much. It's we can't wait. It's actually been really chill, like planning it so far. So I think we've been quite lucky because we've got it at Christmas time. We both love Christmas, so it's like that kind of makes it a little bit easier. And we've both agreed on everything. Like
nice.
So I mean, to be fair, I'm quite easygoing, so it's, you know, it's not really
good. Yes, rage, have that, have whatever you want, it's fine.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, like, it's not really been that difficult to plan, but at the same time, like, we have got all the payments coming up in the next few months, so maybe be a bit more stressed then.
So, to be fair, I did find that bit that stressful, because a lot of the time, at that point, you've kind of done everything, it's just someone going, can I have some money, please? And yeah, here's all the money.
Money.
The moment you say it's for a wedding, people like treble the prices.
Yeah. But yeah, we're really looking forward to it. I mean, it's been great fun planning it, because you're just planning a big party that you get to have everything the way you want it to be. It's like Christmas time, so there'd be mulled wine and mince pies and everything. And it's been great fun, really. Which is a good sign, really, as well.
That's what it's supposed to be. Definitely. Yeah, weddings are like probably one of the weirdest things, because it's a party that you have, and it's probably the only party you'll ever go to where you literally know everybody there.
Yeah.
And everybody's there really to see you. It was, I remember mine. It was a strange day, really enjoyable day, but a very strange day.
Yeah, I can imagine it is, because you are the centre of attention as well, which is, I'm not really used to being centre of attention, so it's going to be interesting.
Put it all on Rach. So that's every time that something sort of came up, I was like, no, the bride's the centre of attention. I just put it all on my other half. Yeah.
We'll see how Rach feels about that.
Yeah.
It's a good test to see if she listens to the podcast and gives me a kick.
She started following me the other day, which is, again, this is a really weird moment when people like you and Rach and like TT started following me. I was like, this is you've got far too many followers. This is strange. So if she's managed to get this far through,
she's not been annoyed by something I've already said. So, it's like I say, it is odd. Like I get the same though when someone follows me. Like I had, I don't know how to pronounce his name, unfortunately, so I'm not even going to try it, but one of the Golden Demon winners, he followed me the day, and I was like, oh my God, he's followed me. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And it was just, yeah, it's like a proper fanboy moment. Like, this is so cool. Like, he's actually followed me. And, yeah. And it's like, yeah, it's just mad. Like, never stop. I really don't ever want that to go away, because that feeling is really nice. Like,
yeah,
it's just really cool. Like, yeah, like bit like someone you look up to, like following you, and you're like, oh my God, they're like,
they've seen it. They've seen what I do. Yeah.
It's just a really cool feeling. And like, I never ever want that to go away. So yeah, it's just great. But again, it's another thing of social media, isn't it? Like, you get to see amazing people and part of the hobby. Like, there's so many cool people, and in the grand scheme of things, like the people at the very top of the hobby, they're very accessible, so you can get like interaction with these people and speak to them and message them. Yeah. It's just really cool.
Back to your wedding though.
Oh yeah.
On that. So what minis are you putting on top of the cake?
That's a very good question. I haven't decided
who's
yet.
Painting them. Because, I mean, between you and Rach, there's a lot of skill there. Will you paint each other's?
That's a good question. I don't know if she'd want, like, a really grimy wedding dress on top of it.
Dear, a screamer killer. I'm not sure she'd take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I'm not sure. To be fair, we need a big cake for that. I'm not really sure yet. We're going to have some minis that we've painted.
You've got to have it somewhere, yeah.
Yeah. But there's not really that many, like... Oh, we could have, like, the fantasy battle vampires. If we can get a couple of metal ones of those would be cool.
The Inquisitors could be quite, because they're all generally quite smartly dressed.
Yeah, that's some very true.
Variety.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. Yeah. There's definitely some thought needs to go into this. We've got 5 months. We can paint something in time, I hope. Maybe.
Alongside everything else that you're going to have to paint in between now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it'd be all right. I'm sure. Yeah. Do a YouTube video for it, so it's fine. It's content.
Exactly, yeah. You're just going to get loads. Everyone that listens now, just if you go and find a mini that can be from Spencer or Rach, just go and send those.
Yeah, that'd be perfect. Also,
yeah,
like that, there's some good troll content there, because like someone could find some really interesting minis to send over and be like, oh yeah, this is you, Spen. It's like Great and Clean One. Like, cheers.
Yeah, Great and Clean One and a Screamer Killer. That would be like a perfect cake top as well.
Perfect.
God, that would have to be a huge cake.
Yeah, it would be very, very big. I'm just looking at it. I've got a Great and Clean One on the shelf in front of me, and that'd be a big cake.
Yeah, just that on top is it's very beefy.
Yeah, it's a big topper.
I'm going to have to think about that now, because there's some really cool minis out there.
There is. There's too many good minis out there.
There really is.
You know, I think there's so many going back years and years and years as well. Like, that's the thing, is what, like 40 years of Warhammer history. So,
yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So aside from that, obviously you between you and Rach, you've got quite a heavy Warhammer house. Is there anything sort of you do to have some downtime or chill away from a Warhammer?
Yeah, we both do indoor bouldering quite a lot.
That seems to be the big thing in the Warhammer community at the minute. It's really some weird. Sort of rock climbing.
There's so many of us. Like, it's great. It's a really good sport though, because it's not just strength. Like, when you first start, obviously you need a certain amount of strength because you're hauling yourself up a wall.
But
it's like, it's not just strength, it's strength, it's technique. And then as you get better, it's like problem solving as well. So, like, I don't know how familiar you are with like bouldering, but if anyone isn't familiar with it, so you have different holds that go up a wall, and the wall can be different shapes. So it can be like just a straight up wall, it could be leaning back slightly, or it could be like a overhang, or it could even be like a whole cave, you know. So there's all sorts of different shapes of wall and different shapes of holds. And when you go to a problem, they're color coded. So if you go up to a problem, you'll see it, and it'll be, say, like, it's all the green holds. And then there'll be a hold at the start, or two holds at the start, which you've got to start with your hands on. And then there's a hold at the end where you've got to get to and touch with both hands. You can use any of the holds in between. So sometimes, like when you first start, it's very simple, and they put like a lot of holds on for whatever the problem is. And so you've got a lot of options, and you can make your way up pretty simply. And as you progress more and more, the problems get harder, and there'll be different types of holds which are maybe harder to hold onto, or the positioning of them will be really weird, or there isn't very many holds, so you have to do bigger movements. And as you get better, it becomes like problem solving, like trying to think like, okay, well, how can I, like, what way am I going to move my body to get to the next hold, or to get to the next two holds, or whatever it is, and it's really good. It's like it's a proper like mental and physical workout when you're there. It's I don't think I'm particularly good, but I enjoy it, and it's something that's nice and different, and like you can't really think of anything else when you're doing it.
Yeah,
it's so involved, so it's quite nice in terms of like you're literally all in on it. Yeah, it's a really good hobby to do outside of Warhammer, and then other than that, like just watch sports and watch TV and video game a bit, but okay. I get a bit addicted to video games, so I try to limit that. Like Diablo 4 is the current one.
I've seen that's come out. Yeah.
Yeah. I was very addicted to Diablo 3, let's be honest, and played a lot of that. So I'm trying just to like trickle feed myself it a little bit. Don't go overboard. But,
yeah, Diablo 2 was probably one of my favourite games when I was younger. Such an incredible game.
Yeah, yeah. It's the whole series is amazing. And it's just like with Diablo 3, when they brought out seasons, so every few months you'd start a fresh character and then you'd like progress it and see how far you could. Oh, it is so, so addictive.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hopefully I don't like get addicted to Diablo 4 and just stop painting everything.
Yeah, all of a sudden your Instagram becomes about Diablo rather than about Warhammer. I don't know what's happened.
Yeah, yeah. Other than that, like I really like board games as well. So like, I don't really get much time to play like proper sit down board games with other people.
Hmm.
So I like solo board games, which sounds really a bit weird, but they're really good. Like I think they've come on a lot in like the last few years. So they're quite a recent sort of, I don't want to say invention, but like you know, recent like more solo board games come about more recently. So for example, there's one called Final Girl, and it's a board game. It's only like single player. So,
okay.
Like, you can't,
that's interesting.
Yeah, it's really good. That one's really fun to play. And there's another game called two games, Escape the Dark Castle and Escape the Dark Sector, and they're like card based games, and you can play them with people. You can play them on your own. And they're very similar. Like one is sci-fi themed and one is fantasy themed.
Okay.
They're really fun. And yeah, like they're just a little bit different. And I can't really, unless you play one, it's very hard to describe like what it's like to play one. Because like if you play a video game, obviously the game does a lot of stuff for you.
Yeah.
Whereas like if you play a board game, you have to do it all. So, and like you have to follow the rules, and it's a bit of a weird, like I'm just like going like, oh, I didn't mean to do that. I'm going to go back. There's no point in that. Like, it's a really odd one. Like, they're really fun though, and like, definitely recommend everyone try them out at some point. Probably a good one to try is Escape the Dark Castle, because it's really simple. So it's quite easy to play on your own, because you haven't got like a load of rules to try and remember all by yourself
whilst
playing it. And if you get it and you don't like it on its own, like playing it on your own, you can play it with other people. And it's really fun.
That's good. Well, yeah.
Right? And the guys at Themeborn are really, really good. Like really nice people.
Cool. So, yeah, it feels like there's been a lot more games that have come out that have been focused on multiplayer, but they all seem to have this, here's how you would do it if you were to play on your own.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got the XCOM board game somewhere, and technically you can play that on your own, and that I'm not advising anybody play the XCOM board game on their own. It's an insane game.
Yeah, I think Terraforming Mars was probably like one of the, I think that was like one of the first ones that I remember that was like good for playing on your own, because of the way the game works. It was quite, I don't want to say easy to play on your own, but it's like easily adapted from multiplayer to playing it on your own. That was quite a fun one. Scythe as well. That was okay to play on your own, but it's a bit complicated because like doing the like opponent's stuff was like a little bit tricky whilst you're doing your own stuff. It's quite a complicated game as well on its own anyway. So. Yeah, I think the simpler games, like there are multiplayer games that are, you know, can be played as solo, and the simpler ones are better, just because it's less stuff to remember all by yourself.
Yeah,
because when you're playing a board game, generally like you've got someone else to bounce rules off, or like oh, is that how we do stuff or whatever. But obviously, if you're on your own, you can't do that. So
Tiny Epic Galaxies was the one I was thinking about.
Yeah,
I've never played the single version of it, but there is a, when you flip, have you played Tiny Epic Galaxies?
No, I've never looked.
Okay. So there's like a game card. So the idea is that there's a load of, you have your galaxy and you've got like rocket ships and stuff like that. And then there's like in the center, there's like different planets. And the aim is to try and collect the planets or do specific things. And all the planets have got like different, they give you like different abilities that you can do. And so you aim to collect those planets and make them part of your galaxy. And so, yeah, you like roll dice and they've got different symbols on and what the symbols mean. So like you can fly off rocket somewhere, or you can use part of your, like you can improve your empire, your galaxy. So you get more rocket ships, or you get more dice to roll and stuff like that. But yeah, the player card, if you flip it over, it's got like a one player version of it.
Oh, okay, cool.
And so I think you're still trying to get the planets, but as you have a turn, the board game does something against you, and then as you improve your galaxy, it also improves the abilities of the enemy board game.
That's cool. Yeah, let's have a look at that.
Yeah, it's a really little. It's like, I mean, this is a podcast where everyone listens to it. It's about like that big. It's a really small. It's a really like really good for travel. Me and my other half take it whenever we go on holidays, stuff like that. It's a travel little game.
That's ace. I'll have to have a look at that. Yeah, pick up a copy and give it a go. I started doing like a few little like board game reviews and audiobook reviews and stuff. Like, I wanted to do something outside of Warhammer, but still kind of in the same realm of it.
Yeah.
So I just started a website and just started doing some like reviews and bits and pieces on there. It's fun and different. It's just, I don't know, it's so funny because Warhammer takes up so much time, but you almost need to have a lot of other stuff. Like, the more time Warhammer takes up, you need to have like more other stuff to unwind from Warhammer with.
Yeah.
It's really funny. I think it's just like because variety is good, isn't it? Like, keeping things different, and you don't want to go all in on something and then burn out.
Yeah, no, for sure. I said that on my... I went on holiday not that long ago, and I threw myself quite heavily into the hobby. I was doing a lot more painting. I had my first tournament coming up, so I was painting a lot of models. I was doing the podcast. I was like really into it. And going on holiday, I hadn't realized how much it was burning me out. And it's a really strange thing to say, the fact that like hobby was burning me out, but it was. I was just doing too much of it. And so going on holiday and then doing that reset, I found coming back, I'm now enjoying painting a lot more. I'm trying new things found more joy from it. It's a hobby. I still enjoyed it, but I perhaps wasn't seeing the burden it was having on my life in general.
Yeah. I think it's very easy to slip into that and not realise how like burnt out you are whilst you are burnt out.
Yeah.
I think it's just because it's like you're like all gas. You know, you're going for it and you don't have like time to stop and think and recharge. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, like I need to do something else. I need to like, it just builds up without realizing. Yeah. So yeah, I think like trying to find a good balance is probably key. And I think I was pretty like, so it was a year where I posted every day for a year on Instagram, and like trying to get enough hobby done to do that was quite tricky.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean, like, I didn't have a lot else going on at the time, so it was fine. And like, you know, I didn't really feel too burnt out, but like there were times when I was definitely burnt out, but didn't really realize it. But looking back on it, I'm like, that was not healthy. And like, if it had carried on more, then I probably would have had to take more of a break from the hobby than, you know, just like little breaks more often rather than like it all coming to a crashing standstill and stopping hobbying completely, sort of thing. I don't know, it's a weird one. Like, it's very easy to get fully engrossed in the hobby because there's so much to it, I think, and
the
community is great and everything, so it's very easy to get like all consumed by it rather than actually like taking a step back and go, oh, actually, hey, I'm just gonna take a day off or a weekend off or a week off, and
yeah,
nothing wrong with that, and it's still gonna be here when you come back as well. Like, it's very easy to get like FOMO about the hobby of like, oh, I need to post. It's fine, don't worry about it. Like, if you don't post for a week, like, your next couple of posts might not do as well as like if you posted the next day, but it's better because you're not going to like give up on the hobby next month.
Yeah. And is that post going to be actually a better quality? And your few posts have to be that better quality to get even more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's all little things to think about, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's it in terms of those sort of questions. I've got one last question to ask.
Okay.
If you could pick one person in the community, and it can't be Rage.
Damn it, that was my easy out.
Yeah. And they were the only person that you could play Warhammer with for the rest of time, who would it be?
Oh, that is a hard question.
Yeah, this is why I said not rage, because that was an obvious answer. Yeah,
that was going to be a very obvious answer. Oh, one person that we need to play Warhammer with for the rest of the time.
Yeah.
Well, it has to be someone who knows the rules. So that's... I don't know. Very good question. Maybe Byron from Artis Opus.
Okay.
Yeah, get on with Byron really well. He's a really nice guy.
Any particular reason beyond he's a nice guy? Is it?
No, that's about it, really.
That's it.
Just get on with him well. And, like, he's into climbing, so there's something a bit different that I can chat to him about as well. So, keep
it right. Yeah.
But I don't know. Now you got me thinking, is it Byron or is... No, I honestly think it's Byron. Like, there's so many people it could be, but, like, yeah. And the thing is, Byron as well, like, he does the painting as well, so, yeah. I don't even know if Byron does play. So we'd probably just be sat around painting, talking about painting and
that's fine.
Climbing. Yeah.
Forever.
Yeah, that's fine.
Nice. That's a solid reason as any, and that's the aim of the question, is to understand that reasoning as to why. But yeah, and that was it. That's all of my questions.
Brilliant.
So thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. It's been great. Hopefully I wasn't like too rambly on the questions, because it's easy to ramble, isn't it?
It's a podcast. Everybody rambles. That's the point of it.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah. Everyone enjoys the tangents more than the actual questions. Nobody actually enjoys me as part of this. I'm here as a facilitator to let rambles happen.
You facilitate really well, so thanks.
It's been a pleasure having you on. It's been educational. One of the good things about this podcast is the fact that I get really, really good people on who are really good players, really good painters, and just getting like those little nuggets of wisdom is good for me, and hopefully the listeners get a lot out of it as well. So
I
appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, like, the guests you've had on are brilliant. They're like, and you've had like a nice range of different guests as well, so it's pretty cool.
It's just people I find interesting more than there's no rhyme or reason for it. I'm just like, you're cool. Will you come on?
Yeah, it's brilliant. I like it a lot.
Yeah.
It's a great podcast. Okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing, like, well, obviously I know who you've got next, but looking forward to what else you've got coming up in the future. So.
Yeah, it's very off the cuff. I kind of get to the point where I'm like, I've just put one out. I've got 2 weeks to put the next one out. I should probably do an interview at some point soon, because it's going to take some time to edit as well. It's very much I'll send a few messages out to various people and see who says yes.
Yeah. Good idea.
I really appreciate it. And obviously, anybody that's listening, if somehow you got to this point and you don't know Spencer, or you don't know where to find Spencer, your Spence paints on. Spends painting pretty much everywhere.
Yeah, Spends painting on everything except for TikTok, where it's Spends_painting, because Spends painting was taken.
Oh.
Nearly got the full set, but not quite.
To find whoever's got it and buy off them.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to follow me on TikTok, just follow me on Instagram. You'll see all the same content anyway. So
follow him on both, because that way he's getting
That's even better. Yeah.
Obviously, check out your web store. It is a thing, but your website, and then you've got your Patreon as well. Definitely, obviously, go and support Spencer. He does incredible stuff. His painting is absolutely amazing. If you've not seen his golden demon pin winning dreadnought, go and see it, because it's insane. That I keep going back and looking at that dreadnought, and there's so much to see on it. It's an incredible model.
Thank you.
Really incredible.
It was a 4 months paint.
How long did Stop it at the end of it. How long did that take you to paint?
I don't know. Like, got me up there, like, probably just over 100 hours, something like that.
Wow.
It was a lot. It was a lot. I think more of it was just like...
You can see why. It is absolutely incredible. The level of detail in there is insane. But 100 hours, that's crazy. Yeah.
A lot of it was... It wasn't just, like, the painting time. It was, like, painting something, then looking at it and, like, evaluating it, rather than just being, like, full gas, like,
paint.
Like looking at it, changing a few little bits here and there, like, you know, does this work? Not quite. Like, change that up. That takes a lot more time than actually just putting paint to model. So
so everyone should go and check out that model, because it's 100 hours are worthwhile. So
thanks very much.
I hope everyone enjoyed today's show as much as I certainly did. Thank you as always for sort of joining me on the podcast. I really appreciate everyone that listens. If you did enjoy it, please do the standard thing of subscribing or reviewing on wherever you found it. You're always welcome to get in touch. find me on Instagram. It's First Rank Fire Podcast on Instagram. You have got an email, firstrankfirepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to get a hold of me. Yeah. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye.
Thanks very much.